We're pleased at this time to continue our study in the book of Genesis. We're still in the first chapter of Genesis, and in our last lesson, we had gotten into the 13th verse. Verses 11 and 12 tell of the events that happened on the third day. On this third day, God said, verse 11, "Let the earth bring forth grass, the herb yielding seed, and the fruit tree bearing fruit after its kind, whose seed is in itself upon the earth," and it was so. Verse 12, "And the earth brought forth grass, and herb yielding seed after his kind, and the tree yielding fruit, whose seed was in itself after his kind, and God saw that it was good." This is the third time that we have the phrase, "and God saw that it was good," telling us very plainly that God was pleased with what he had done here, that everything was done according to plan, according to what he wanted. There was no accidental thing that God had lost control of. There was nothing that was imperfect or not pleasing to him. Everything was going according to the time scale that he had for it. He saw that it was good. And we see here that in this third day, the plants are put up on this earth. These three types of plants are intended to cover all types of plants. And these are the most obvious categories of these three plants. The term grass refers to all ground covering, spreading vegetation, and as we noted, it could also include the microscopic plants. Herbs has to do with all bushes and shrubs, and trees with the category including all large woody plants, including fruit-bearing trees. And he says in verse 36, "And the evening and the morning were the third day." The terms evening, the Hebrew word is E-R-E-B, and morning, the Hebrew is B-O-Q-E-R, each occur more than 100 times in the Old Testament. They always have the literal meaning, that is, the termination of the day period of light and the termination of the daily period of darkness, respectively. When the word day is modified by a numeral, such as the third day, this is a construction occurring more than 100 times in the first five books alone, and always with a literal meaning. Even though it may be hard for us to imagine the lands and seas and all plants being formed in one literal day, that is exactly what the Bible says. We're not justified in questioning God's power to do this or his truthfulness in telling us that he did. So now we move into the next section of Genesis 1, verses 14 through 19. "And God said, Let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and for years. And let them be for lights in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth, and it was so. And God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day, and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also. And God set them in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth, and to rule over the day and over the night, and to divide the light from the darkness, and God saw that it was good. And the evening and the morning were the fourth day." On the first day of creation, God created and energized the entire universe, the field of operation of divine activity and purpose. On the second day, he made the hydrosphere and atmosphere for the earth. On the third day, he made the waters separate from the dry land and created the plants on the earth. On the fourth day, he made the stars and planets which surround the earth. On the first day, he had said, "Let there be light," Hebrew or. On the fourth day, he said, "Let there be lights," or light givers, Hebrew ma-or. Created light first, then generators of light later. This is the logical and biblical order. The chief purpose of the light of the first three days and the light givers of all other days was to divide the light from the darkness, as stated in verse 4 and verse 18. This shows that both of these systems were essentially identical. The duration of the days and nights was the same in both cases, and the direction of light flowing forth on the earth from space must have been the same in each case. And the fact that light was here before the sun further proves that God created light and is not just the byproduct of an evolved sun. So it seems that light rays were striking the Earth as it rotated on its axis during the first 3 days. These light rays were essentially the same intensities and directions as those which would later come from the heavenly bodies which would be put in place on the fourth day. Light was coming during the day as though from the sun, and during the night as though from the moon and stars, even though they had not yet been made. If such a concept sounds strange, let us remember that it is as easy for God to create waves of light energy as it is Him for to create generators to produce the same waves of light energy. There was no need for such generators except to serve the additional function, after man's creation, of marking signs and seasons, days and years, verse 14. It did not take a billion years for the light from a star, which is a billion light years distant from the Earth, to reach the Earth after the star was created. The light trail from the star was created all the way from the star to the Earth 3 days before the star itself was created. As was stated earlier, the universe was created full-grown from the beginning. God did not require millions of years to develop it into its intended usable form. The purpose of the heavenly bodies was to give light upon the Earth, verse 15. So this is what they did right from the beginning. And it was so, verse 15. Some have objected to this concept on the basis of evolutionary changes supposedly taking place in the stars. The fact is, however, no one has ever observed such changes taking place. As long as men have been observing the stars, they've always looked as they do now, allowing, of course, for the changes in orientation due to the Earth's rotation, orbital revolution, and axial wobble. The only possible exception of any significance to this statement might be the novas or supernovas that are occasionally observed in the heavens when stars apparently heat up or explode. Some of these have been observed in galaxies supposedly hundreds of thousands of light years from the Earth. The argument is that the event taking place in the star producing the nova or supernova must have taken place the same hundreds of thousands of years ago. There are several possible answers to this. First of all, the tremendous distances of these stars are calculated on the basis of a number of very prejudiced and questionable assumptions. Secondly, geometric methods for measuring such astronomical distances can reach to only about 330 light years, so any greater distances are uncertain, to say the least. Thirdly, also, there is no assurance of the uniformity of the speed of light at such tremendous distances. Fourthly, scientists speak of respectable models of relativity and space curvature, for example, which yield light motions such that light would reach the Earth even from infinite distances in only a few years. Fifthly, let us also note that there is no reason why God could not, if He had so willed, create pulses in the trails of some of the light waves in the very beginning. When such pulses reached the Earth, they could then be interpreted as novas, when they were in reality merely created bursts of energy in the light trails connecting with various stars. And though the reason for God doing such a thing is not clear, that in itself is no argument against it. God very likely has reasons for some of His acts of creation which we do not yet understand, and our ignorance is no reason for our questioning His purposes or actions. In any case, our uncertainty as to the exact explanation of these distant novas cannot offset the clear biblical teaching that the universe has a relatively recent creation. The lights were set in the firmament of heaven. This was not the same firmament as was formed on the second day. That firmament is the open firmament of heaven, where birds were to fly, verse 20. The word firmament may apply to any particular region of space as determined by the context. In this passage, the word firmament refers to outer space where the sun, moon, and stars are. The fact that both sun and moon are called light givers does not suggest that they are composed of the same material. One actually generates light whereas the other only reflects light. But both give light as far as their functions relative to the earth are concerned. The stars are mentioned as though they are of minor importance compared to the sun and moon. He simply says he made the stars also. Even though stars are tremendously bigger than the earth, and many of them are larger than our sun, they are of a much simpler construction than the earth. A star is mostly hydrogen and helium, essentially quite simple, whereas the structure of the earth is of great complexity, perfectly and uniquely designed for living creatures. Complexity and organization and purpose are much more meaningful measures of significance than mere size. There is no need to try to correlate this simple Bible record of the making of the stars with various modern theories of stellar and galactic evolution. It is sufficient to note that the evolutional theories are at best only interesting speculations, none of which is generally accepted, and all of which face important objections. On the other hand, there is no reason at all, other than the prejudice of disbelief, not to believe that the stars were made just as they are now. No one has ever seen a star or a galaxy evolve or change at all. Since the heavenly bodies were to be used to determine seasons and days and years, we learned that there were to be distinct seasons through the year, and this implies that the Earth's axis was inclined as it is at present. Although the vapor canopy before the flood maintained a warm climate everywhere, there would still have been slight seasonal changes in temperature. The use of stars for signs is not so easy for us to interpret. The most natural interpretation is that this term has reference to the various star groupings which could orient observers to directions at night. Also, it seems, for instance, that the wise men who came to see Jesus were guided by a sign among the stars. We also note that these zodiacal signs were corrupted into pagan astrology. The phrase, "and it was so," is found in this passage. For the fourth time out of six times, it is mentioned in the first chapter of Genesis, verses 7, 9, 11, 15, 24, and 30. The Bible stresses that what God said, He also does. The phrase, "and God said," is found 10 times, verses 3, 6, 9, 11, 14, 20, 24, 26, 28, 29. The first seven of these were each followed by a creative command beginning with the imperative word, "let." Let's also note that the Bible summarized the work of this fourth day of creation by stating that God saw it all to be good. There was at that time nothing in any of the stars, planets, satellites, sun, moon, or any other heavenly body that was out of place or which had any conflict or catastrophe in any way. Having divided the water from the airspace on the second day, and having separated the land from the water and creating plant life on the third day, He made the sun, moon, and stars on the fourth day. God next proceeded to make animal life to live in the airspace and the water on the fifth day. And then He made animal life for the earth space on the sixth day. All the necessities for living creatures were present on earth by this time: light, air, water, chemicals, plants, fruits, and so forth. But one deficiency yet remained. The earth was still void of inhabitants, and God had formed it to be inhabited, Isaiah 45:18. So the fifth and sixth days were to be devoted to these final acts of creation. So in Genesis 1, verses 20 through 23, "And God said, Let the waters bring forth abundantly the moving creature that hath life, and fowl that may fly above the earth in the open firmament of heaven. And God created great whales and every living creature that moveth, which the waters brought forth abundantly after their kind, and every winged fowl after his kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them and said, Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters and the seas, and let fowl multiply on the earth. And the evening and the morning were the fifth day." In these verses, Genesis 1, 20 through 23, We have the events of creation, which happened on the fifth day. The first introduction of animal life was not a fragile blob of protoplasm that by chance came together in response to electrical discharges over a primitive ocean, as evolutionists believe. Instead, the water suddenly, abundantly, had clusters of swarming creatures. Where King James says, "Let the waters bring forth," the Revised Standard says, "The waters teem with living creatures." The waters did not bring forth, as mistranslated in the King James Version. Moving creatures, as used here, refers to all kinds of marine animals, invertebrates, vertebrates, and reptiles, also possibly microscopic forms of life. The word life occurs for the first time in this verse. That's the Hebrew word nephesh, N-E-P-H-E-S-H. Actually, this is also the word for soul, and is many times used to refer to both the soul of man and the life of animals. In the biblical sense, plants do not have real life or soul or consciousness, but both animals and men do. Along with animals for the water sphere, there also appeared animals for the air sphere. Birds to fly in, literally the face of the firmament of heaven. The word translated open in King James is penny, P-E-N-E, and can carry the meaning of face of. Animal life was not simply brought forth from the earth or water, as was true of plant life. The principle of consciousness was not able to be developed merely by complex organization of the basic physical elements, and so it required a new creation. God had created the physical elements of the universe on the first day, and here he performed his second act of true creation. God created great whales and every living creature that moveth. The living creature is the same as the living soul. So this act of creation can be understood as the creation of the part of life which is conscious life. This would henceforth be an integral part of every animal being, including man. The first animal specifically mentioned as the product of this act of creation were the great whales. This is the same term translated as great sea monsters and dragon. Evidently, this term includes all large sea creatures, even monsters of the past that are now extinct. The frequent references to dragons in the Bible, as well as the early records and traditions of most of the ancient nations, cannot be shrugged off as mere fairy tales. These likely represent the memory of dinosaurs handed down by tribal ancestors who encountered them before they became extinct. The types of animals mentioned in this passage are apparently intended to include every inhabitant of the waters and atmosphere. Furthermore, each was to reproduce after its own kind. Like the various plants, the actual biochemical reproductive systems of the animals were programmed to assure the stability of the kinds. Physically and chemically, animals are similar to plants. Modern genetics has shown that all reproducing systems function in the framework of the marvelous information programmed in the DNA molecule. The DNA, deoxyribonucleic acid, is programmed to allow for wide individual variations within the kind, but not beyond the structure of the kind itself. Here God not only declared that his work was good, but he also pronounced a blessing on the animals he had created. Although animals are not an object of love as man would be, animals nevertheless are an object of his care and concern. Not even a sparrow would ever fall on the ground without his noticing and caring, Matthew 10:29. And he continually provides food for them, Matthew 6:26. His blessing included a command for the animals he had created to continue to multiply so they would soon be in all parts of the world. It is interesting to note that a similar command was given to the animals coming from the ark after the flood, Genesis 8:17. Once again, it is obvious that the accepted views of evolutionary order is not the same as the order of God's creation here recorded in Genesis. Evolutionary theory says that marine organisms evolved first, then land plants, later birds. Genesis says that land plants came first, then marine creatures and birds simultaneously. And it seems as if the largest sea animals came first, again contrary to evolutionary theory. Now let us move into the next two verses, Genesis 1, verses 24 and 25. And God said, Let the earth bring forth the living creature after his kind, cattle and creeping things, and beasts of the earth after his kind. And it was so. And God made the beasts of the earth after his kind, and the cattle after their kind, and everything that creepeth upon the earth after his kind. And God saw that it was good. These two verses tell what happened on the first part of the sixth day of creation. The animals were created. And then the latter part of the sixth day, we're going to have the creation of humans. Up to this time, everything has worked perfectly according to God's will, so far as the creation goes. Each time he spoke about it and commented upon it, he said that it was good. Never did he say that it was bad. Never did he say that it went awry or that it was not according to how he intended for it to be. But at this point of creation, everything was good. We're now ready for the animals and then later ready for the creation of man. All of the things are set in place now. The atmosphere, the earth, the things that are necessary for life, and vitality are all present here upon the earth, and God is going to now take these elements and put in that context of the animals, including man. Well, that concludes our time for this portion of our study. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.